Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, reporting for duty.
And beaming over from the USS Reliance, special guest, Andy Chan.
Hi.
Great to have you on the show for the very first time. Just a little background information for all of our loyal listeners. Andy Chan, we actually met you at a screening of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, a few short weeks ago.
Yeah, that's right. I invited a friend of mine, Ben Yong, from university.
I've never heard of him. don't want to know.
And he decided to bring some of his friends that he thought might enjoy the movie.
Well, it was a great experience. We ended up going for beers afterwards. Andy, Cam and I were genuinely impressed with your Star Trek knowledge throughout that evening, so we figured you'd be good on the show.
Oh, really? I'm actually not that confident. I haven't even finished the original series, so I don't...
Neither is Tyler.
So I wouldn't be able to talk about anything really about that.
Cam would be happy to get you to replace me on the show if that's the case.
I don't think that's possible.
It's true. I already lost Ben Yong, so...
Well, you know, this will be a fun series for us to tackle, or fun episode, I should say. Cam, what are we doing tonight?
Yes, this week's conundrum is Pitch Your Own Star Trek Anthology.
I think just for anybody who doesn't know, kind of big news / unconfirmed rumor at this point, but it's coming from a very reliable source, is it not, Cameron?
Yeah, Birth Movie's death, and it's been picked up by pretty much every outlet humanly possible.
Yes, even one Tony Galusha's MySpace page.
Oh, really?
He's reporting it. Yeah, really, Cam.
Oh, okay, yes. I thought you were going to say his Friendster account.
No, essentially the idea is that Star Trek will reset itself every season. It'll be an anthology series similar to what a lot of the prestige networks are doing right now with Fargo, True Detective,
American Horror Story.
Exactly. And I never even considered this to be a possibility.
No.
Cam, do you remember a few weeks ago I was proclaiming that this is going to go for 7 seasons and, you know, and I was very confident about that?
Weren't you saying it was going to be an Admiral Janeway spinoff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, right. Thanks for already ruining my best pitch so far for this evening.
I'm sorry.
Here's the thing. This could potentially go on indefinitely, and it could potentially, you know, be a one-and-done project as well. It just depends on how it's received. I think this is an intriguing idea, one that I never considered for Star Trek. It has a possibility to ensure that Star Trek doesn't go stagnant, which I think is very enticing, because we've seen that happen with more than a few Star Trek series.
What are you talking about?
Well, I don't know. I'm curious. Andy, what's your reaction to the idea of, you know, Star Trek becoming an anthology series?
The idea, I think, is very exciting because a lot of the series these days that are anthologies, they're very well written, and I think a lot of resources can be put into them to make them kind of like give it your best shot. You know, there's no we're gonna wait until the third season and then it's gonna roll up and then it's gonna be a good show. It's more like there's no guarantee. It's like this is your one shot. Maybe if it sucks, that's it.
Yeah, what if they had to cram all of Breaking Bad into like one season? You would have had a lot of action going on, you know. But that maybe brings up a good question. I think one of the good things that we see throughout Star Trek, especially series like Deep Space Nine, Enterprise, is that we have these long gestating character arcs. So there will be some good give and take with this particular format. I'm all for it, though, because I really think Star Trek needs to change things up, especially when it comes to storytelling. Cam, a couple months ago, you and I were talking about how it's a new era of television. The storytelling format for television has changed so much since Star Trek was last on the air, and I think you and I were both concerned about whether Star Trek could match what's going on. What's your reaction to this?
My reaction is a couple things. One, it's a really good idea because it has a built-in safety device to it, in that if the show bombs, they can just end after one season, but it's a complete story.
You mean my Travis Merriweather spinoff is going to be a bomb?
Second of all, people like arcs nowadays. Like, everything is serialized, and they've said that this will be heavily serialized.
Yeah.
This means that they can map out what the 13 episodes or whatever it is, what story they're going to tell for 13 episodes. It won't be like making it up as they go, like some of the other Trek series or other shows, you know, like say X-Files or something
True.
Like that.
Yeah.
Where if it keeps going, it runs out of gas. This way they can map out one season, have a solid story in place, and then go from there.
My only concern is, you know, mapping it out so far in advance. I do like how Star Trek can, you know, jump from tone to tone every week, genre hop, as you will. I wonder, Andy, I mean, what are some of your favorite serialized shows, just to give listeners an idea of what your tastes lean towards?
Well, I don't know if, I'm not really sure of the definition of serialized, but one thing that I'm thinking of, that one series that I really, really like that I think is kind of like this, is the Ghost in the Shell standalone complex.
Okay, yeah.
So they do have, there is an overarching storyline about the something 11, I forget, the suicidal cult. But the interspersed in between those episodes are some kind of standalone episodes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it works really well. The writing is very strong. And
it has a balance to it. Yeah.
Sort of like DS9.
Yeah. So are you...
Yeah, sort of like that.
Are you saying that Harry Kim is going to be recast as Scarlett Johansson going forward?
I'd be okay with never seeing Harry Kim in the Star Trek ever again.
Well, there goes one of my anthologies.
I hope he's not listening.
He is.
It was going to be a spinoff of Favorite Son.
But I think going forward, this has the potential to tell stories in a way that we've never seen before on Star Trek, which I think is great. One of the examples that Cam and I have gone back and forth about what works is season 4 of Enterprise, where you do have these, you know, 3 or 4 episode arcs, and then you go and get maybe a standalone episode here or there, which gives us great episodes like, you know, Bound, one of Cam's favorites.
That's right.
You know? Or what was the one where the guy's son got lost in transporter beam?
Oh, can't remember.
It was like Icarus Wings or something like that. Flying too close to the sun, you know.
Right.
So I do think that the storytelling potential here is pretty darn fruitful going forward.
Could get some great casts, too.
Well, that's just it. Here's the thing. If you have, say, Ian McShane just signed on to American Gods, which is Brian Fuller's next series. Brian Fuller, of course, is going to be the Star Trek showrunner for the next series.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can land people for a 13-episode run who would not normally sign on to do a 7-year TV series.
It's a shorder commitment.
Yeah. Do you think about how many stars would be like, I can be on Star Trek, I can be the captain for just one season, and, you know, that's it. Sign me up. Like, that sounds fun. Like, and they don't have to worry about typecasting.
Yeah.
Yes. So I definitely think that there's a lot of potential for storytelling, a lot of cast potential as well. I'm still wondering if Tony Todd, who is going around saying that he's, you know, been going through auditions, if really that's going to draw in a lot of, like, non-fans, you know?
He was actually going to Renegades auditions.
He just didn't realize.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm excited for this. Like, I never really contemplate, like, I was very trepidatious about what the new series could be. And I was listening to previous podcasts discussing, you know, our first initial thoughts about what Star Trek 2017 could be.
Yeah.
And then I said, you know, I think people are taking Fuller and Nicholas Meyer too literally when they're mentioning stuff about how Star Trek VI was an inspiration.
Right.
I think there is a possibility. Maybe this does take place in the TOS movie era. What are you guys' thoughts? I mean, do you anticipate what kind of timeline here going forward, or have you even thought about that so far?
I haven't thought about that at all. But I'm thinking in terms of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be more popular the closer you get to Next Generation.
You know, are you thinking like those same next gen TV series uniforms, or even like the more of the Deep Space Nine kind of First Contact uniforms?
More of like series one.
Okay. Like, oh wow, you mean like the tight spandex?
Well, not maybe.
You want to see men wearing skirts again on Star Trek?
I think that they could actually. They don't really have to stick so closely to. You know, it doesn't have to fit in exactly. They can redesign that stuff.
I don't know. Star Trek fans can be a little finicky about continuity.
Look at the production values of the Enterprise uniforms versus, like, the TNG Season 1 uniforms. They still look more modern than, you know, the tights.
I would like to bring back the motion picture uniforms.
Is that why you wore one this evening?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. I guess that spells it out for me.
Yeah, I mean,
what about you, era-wise? What are you...
Well, I mean, the original story that from the Birth, Movies, Death said it would take place between Star Trek VI and Next Generation.
So that's like Enterprise C sort of era?
Yeah.
Are we going to get a John Harriman spinoff?
Wow, I hadn't really thought about that. But, I mean, wasn't Renegades? No, Star Trek of Gods and Men was a John Harriman spinoff.
Really?
Yes, it was, actually.
Actually, I did look that up in the Wikipedia yesterday while doing research.
So I've watched it. It's horrific. So,
horrific.
So, yeah, I
not
mean...
Ruckific?
Oh, my Lord.
That was a stretch. I'm sorry.
Apologize to everyone.
Especially Alan Ruck.
So, I mean, I would be interested just to see, because to me, the original series feels very different from Next Generation. So,
just in tone and storytelling.
Yeah.
Are you talking about the TV show or the original series movies?
Really, well, both. Yeah. To me, both. But, I mean, obviously, the original series feels very different than Next Gen.
Yes.
But definitely the movies, too, feel different. So, I would be interested to see maybe, like, sort of a bridging the gap between those two.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't know what kind of story potential. Like, I don't have ideas in my head as to what story that could be. I guess more, you know, smoothing out sort of differences between the Klingons, I guess.
Maybe the entire anthology series one is about the Enterprise C coming back through that temporal rift and getting slowly getting destroyed. You know?
Maybe.
It takes place over the course of 13 hours. We just get to watch.
Real time.
Yeah. It's pretty horrific. You get to bring back Shooter McGavin as well.
Oh my Lord.
They don't recast him.
Could we see the emergence of the Ferengi in a whole series with their laser whips?
I would love to, yeah. Well, here's the thing. What do you guys think about it aesthetically? Like, what could it look like? Because the hints that we're getting is that it's going to be kind of the era with the TOS uniforms, like from the movies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious what it's going to look, how that's going to translate on television, because we've seen them in flashbacks, whether Picard is getting stabbed in the chest or if the Enterprise C is visiting. But what about just the consoles, the corridors? Like, it's going to look different than what we've been accustomed to in either J.J. Abrams universe, the movie universe, and the 24th century Rick Berman era series. What do you think about the aesthetic potential of this? Like, just the look of the series.
Well, what's attracted me the most, I've always enjoyed the original series cast movies much more than the TNG movies.
Yeah.
Even though
I think they're more consistent.
Yeah, and I think they look a lot more gritty and they feel more real.
Yeah.
Whereas the TNG, they feel like kind of dolled up because it's a movie now.
Right.
Rather than
very much the movie of the week, but with a bit of an extra budget sort of feel to it.
Dark and ten forward a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know, Cam. What about you? Like, do you think, just think about where television is now. Think about, like, the budget potential for this, because I don't think they're going to go cheap on this. Like, I do think they want to make this look good to make people watch it. What do you think this could look like?
I think it's going to be much more grounded looking than, like, an original series. Like, the fact that, apparently, you know, he's such a big fan of Star Trek VI. Star Trek VI had a very kind of grounded, sort of realistic tone to it.
Yeah.
In terms of the visual look of the film and everything. So I could see it kind of, because that would make the most sense to seg into like sort of Next Generation aesthetics.
But there is still a big, big time gap between Star Trek VI and Encounter at Farpoint.
It has to be set somewhere in the middle, right? Because you're not going to have Kirk and you're not going to have Picard. So
can we count out an Enterprise B story?
I hope so.
We already know what the Enterprise C's fate is. I don't think this is necessarily going to be a show that takes place on any of the iterations of the Enterprise as we know it.
I think that would be too cheesy.
Yeah.
That's not what I want to see.
Cheese.
No, I like I said, I gave a little hint about my three options, and one of them was kind of just a throwaway option. And
okay.
So. That's kind of like the thing that I don't really want, but I think I could imagine like that being some sort of like stupid fan service.
Right.
I think there will be fan service in this.
I'm hoping the show will just center on the president of the Federation, played by Kurtwood Smith.
That would be amazing. He just keeps calling people dumbass.
Yeah, exactly.
All of his subordinates.
And doing guitar solos.
I'd be down for that. Okay. Well, guys, I mean, just before we wrap up our initial thoughts on this pitch, is there anything else that you wanted to share? Because I think it'd be fun for us to pitch our own ideas for an anthology series. Kind of the ideas that maybe aren't worth exploring for 7 seasons,
right.
But could work over the course of 13 episodes.
Yeah, I mean, because I think we've seen maybe the end of the seven seasons of a show of a cast just sort of developing over 7 years.
Yeah.
With sort of the way the TV industry works now and Star Trek's kind of questionable popularity with mainstream viewers, I don't think we're going to get that again. I'll miss it, but I guess the anthology is a good way to go. So I think it's interesting to see what sort of stories we would like to see explored where, you know, the idea of, say, just grabbing something out of my head, like a story of like Kai Winn over 7 years would be a bit much, but maybe 13 episodes.
They all take place in the fire caves.
Yeah, exactly. It's after she got burnt up.
Yes. It's a bit of a slow burn, so to speak.
Oh my God. So should we maybe get into the pitches? Should
Start? You know what? I'll start off here and then I'll let you guys go for it. But The first idea I have, and I think it'd be fun, and there's three different ways to tackle it. But what if it was...
Just going the Kai Winn story?
Yeah. First way, the fire caves. Yeah. What if it was a 13-episode series that took place in the Mirror Universe? I think it would be fun to either go back and explore... Maybe an Empress Hoshisato spinoff.
Or Linda Park's available.
I know she is. Mm-hmm. Or else something around that era just to see how the Empire really grew. I think it was super fun when we first explored it in the original series as well. I'd love to see it because, look, that's bright. It's a little cheesy, as you said, Andy, but I think it could work if the Mirror Universe is the main setting because, yeah, the cheese factor goes along with it. You buy into it very easily. Thirdly, and Cam, I know you're going to, like, arch an eyebrow here. and I totally understand why, but let's go back to the Deep Space Nine universe. Cam and I, we both went and rewatched all those Deep Space Nine Mirror Universe episodes, and they weren't nearly as fun as the Enterprise or the original series outings. But what if the rebellion succeeds? What if that rebellion on Deep Space Nine succeeds and humans find themselves in the exact same place that, where they're barbarians, much like how Spock, the Mirror Universe Spock, had encountered them.
Right.
I think it'd be fun to have maybe this late 24th century, early 25th century take on the Mirror Universe and how, I don't know, maybe the whole plotline revolves around them encountering the Prime Universe and having to deal with their counterparts there in some fashion. What do you guys think about the idea of an anthology series? It's just 13 episodes, one and done, that takes place in the Mirror Universe. Andy?
I think I would be interested in the Mirror Universe anthology if it were given a hard sci-fi treatment.
Okay.
So if there's there's got to be some sort of... I don't know if it's really appropriate to Star Trek. It doesn't really seem that kind of hard sci-fi... philosophical stuff doesn't really seem to fit into the Star Trek universe as I know it. But if you could use that in the setting, I'd like to see some ideas about how are these mirror universes connected? How do they influence each other? What's the science behind that? How does that manifest itself in each of the universes?
Like, how come Jake Sisko only exists in one universe even though Ben and Jennifer are married at a certain point in both universes?
Right.
I'll never figure it out. Right. You know, but Cam, what's your take on a potential Mirror Universe series?
I think I like the idea. I think it would be fun to see because, you know, we saw with the Enterprise two-parter in A Mirror Darkly that Enterprise the Mirror Universe can be a really rich sort of avenue for really fun storytelling. But I think if you're going to do it as like 13 episodes, they need to figure out perhaps like the philosophy of the Mirror Universe. Because what makes Star Trek great is there's an overall, you know, philosophy to Starfleet, their mission, humanity, all of these things. Whereas when it comes to the Mirror Universe, that isn't really there. And so, I mean, you do have all the political intrigue of what's going on with the, you know, the rebellion and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But there's no kind of hard line sort of, what is this show about?
Well, and that's why I would not want to watch a 7-season series focused on the Mirror Universe. I think if you can do 13 episodes in and out, it's going to be tough to figure out what the whole philosophy is of generally people that seem kind of evil.
I think you could do a show that was very much about like the fallacies of man.
Yeah.
And filter that through the Mirror Universe.
Or just explore how the Ferengi all seem to be real nice guys in the Mirror Universe as well.
I think one other thing to avoid in the Mirror Universe is just making it like opposite universe.
Yeah.
It shouldn't just be opposite. And then Also, I would have to be convinced, in order for me to really think it was good, like, I'd have to be convinced, why does this matter? Like, why does this, whatever's happening in this mirror universe, why does it matter to the Prime universe?
But yeah, why is it worth exploring?
Yeah, why is it worth watching it? Is it just I'm watching people in Star Trek costumes, and they're just doing things that aren't really Star Trek things?
Right.
The very important thing is, part of the fun of the Mirror Universe is you get to see the regular Prime Universe characters that you know and love, and then you get to see them let loose.
It
kind of loses that whole aspect if all you're introduced to are, like, these wild and crazy guys.
Random characters that we don't have an emotional attachment to. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are challenges with this, but hey, if it's 13 episodes, I would sit down, especially since it's my own idea.
Right, so...
and I mean, expect royalties from Paramount.
You know...
or CBS.
Could we get an Enterprise anthology? Like, could we... because that cast is the most likely to come back, obviously. The original series, not so likely.
Yeah.
Deep Space Nine, not so likely.
I'd be down for it. And if you ever proposed, you know, a Linda Park-led Star Trek series, I'd be like, maybe not. But if, for this, I would love to watch that.
You know,
that would be... flash forward 10 years, see how the Empress is going. Maybe she's got somebody else on her back who's trying to take her seat there. It'd be fun to watch.
Right.
Andy, I'm curious. You've got an idea.
My first idea? Okay, well, this is the idea that first came to my mind when you told me about the topic. So I think I kind of didn't read the instructions properly, so I might have not put it in the proper timeline, but it is definitely pre-TNG, and it's a series set around the Eugenics Wars.
Okay.
I don't know if Tyler shared that with you.
Nope.
But I think that what would be interesting is the politics around it. So I think sci-fi and politics kind of make a great combination.
I've seen all the Grand Nagus get all that great political story on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. And what I was thinking of this series... we've kind of heard a little bit about the eugenics wars, and I think there can be a lot of parallels made to our, you know, contemporary real life,
right?
Current events, and there's a lot of ideas that we can explore regarding nature of humanity, ethics of genetic modification, like, and degenerates, like as in from Gattaca,
right?
And I think that would stay true to, I guess, what Star Trek really is about.
Mm-hmm. So this to you would take place in, say, the 1990s in, you know, Asia or something like that? Or, like, what do you picture as a setting? Because I think there is possibilities to explore genetic engineering throughout pretty much any era of Star Trek. But what specifically is in your mind?
Yeah, it would be... well, this doesn't really work because in the canon, I think the eugenics wars ended in 1998 or something
like that.
So it wouldn't work with a real representation of our universe. They could either fudge like a retrocon or whatever the term is to change it so it fits or makes sense. I think that would be accepted.
And I think they had argued, because there was the Star Trek Voyager two-parter past tense that took place in 1996 when the eugenics war was going on, and didn't seem as if anything was going on in Los Angeles at all.
I just made that connection now.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't even think of that. Oh my god, it was not a eugenics war type of environment, was it?
Well, so people had justified it saying that the eugenics war was really just relegated to Asia.
Right.
And that's where it was going on, and it had far more impact there. We could get a lot of actors that look exactly like Benedict Cumberbatch to come back and play South Asian characters, you know.
If it's a cable miniseries or, you know, anthology series, maybe you can get Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah. Hey, do you think he would come back, or do you think he got too much backlash from the hardcore fans? Because I think he did it because he likes Star Trek.
I think it would depend on the material.
Yeah.
If it gave him a really good material to work with, I don't see why not.
Would he get to fight a Vulcan on a garbage truck again?
Oh my god.
Okay.
I mean, do you think, like, a show centered on the rise of Khan would be interesting? Or do you think we need to get away from
Khan?
Well,
what I was thinking of, Khan wouldn't even be a figure in this series. It's not really about Khan. It's more about, like, humanity.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think you need Khan. You could have a neat little cameo or something.
Yeah, at the very end, like, you see him, like, briefly, or in the final episode or something. Well, second right. I think usually it's second last episode, because then you don't have the final episode where you finally get to
right.
the meat and bones.
But here's the title that would sell everybody, from the executives to like mainstream fans. If you called it Star Trek: The Rise of Khan, people could make that connection. It'd be kind of fun. I don't know. I like this idea.
And so, it is established, too, that Khan was sort of, if there is a word, sort of the most kind. He was one of the more kinder of the rulers. Like, he didn't have the sort of, like, massacring the public that the other eugenic sort of warriors had going on.
I think he did it quietly, though. He was still into it.
But he was considered, like, one of the more civil. Benevolent. One of the more benevolent rulers.
Dictator.
Sure. Yes. You know, he wasn't, the monster that the others were.
Okay.
So. And we don't know anything about the others.
No, yeah, that's true. I would have liked to have learned something about them.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, maybe it could be one that is focused on, I don't know, what if they're all like sent off on one of those sleeper ships and they slowly start waking up and they have to deal with each other or something like that. That could work, because it is a Star Trek, you know, so how do we intertwine that spaceship, that star travel sort of aspect into it?
Or even, you know, about these warlords trying to get into the stars.
I was thinking that it might even be... It was a crazy idea that even though it's Star Trek, there's no... doesn't necessarily involve space travel. It's all ground-based.
I don't think it needs to involve space travel necessarily either. But I like the idea of, like, what if these warlords are trying to conquer space somehow, or, you know, build or acquire the technology to do so.
Branch outwards with their empire.
Yeah, they're smart dudes. Maybe they are the inspiration for some of the stuff that Zefram Cochrane did, you know, developing warp. Who knows?
Right.
So, Cam, I'm curious. What have you got for us?
Okay, so I would like to see a series tracking, and I'm normally a guy who kind of hates prequel stuff, but I think it would be really interesting to see a series centered on young Kira in the resistance during the Bajoran occupation.
Yeah, I didn't think of that one.
Now, would you have, you'd obviously have to recast, you know, Kira.
No.
But do you think you could get Mark Alamo into that?
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
He would be a cameo. I don't think I would have Gul Dukat playing a major role in the series.
No, that's Major Kira.
But, I mean, the whole thing with Kira is that she joined the Resistance when she was 12.
Yes.
Like, that's a fascinating story right there. So I think it would be a really great role for maybe like a 17, 18-year-old girl to take on.
I think, yeah, you'd want...
I don't think I'd want a 12-year-old.
Yeah, because it's really hit and miss when you get those preteen, early teen actors onto shows. Like, they often just come off as whiny, and it's unfortunate. If you get like an older actress in her later teens or early 20s playing a young Kira.
Daisy Ridley?
Yeah. I think that'd be excellent.
Mm-hmm. I think it would just be really fascinating to see.
But people be wondering why Kira suddenly has an English accent. That'd be tough to get around.
But I mean, I would love to see more stuff with the Bajoran occupation, because the Cardassians are so riveting in Deep Space Nine for their role played in that. And to see them sort of in power over the Bajoran people.
Yeah, other than some like flashbacks to Tarek Nor where they just turned the lights off.
Yeah.
I never really got a great sense of just how horrific that occupation was.
Right.
It would fit in well
in like a world of like Game of Thrones and stuff like that, where it really would be sort of the violence of this occupation. Like, they wouldn't have to kind of tone it down for TV like the other Star Trek series have had to in the past.
And it brings up a lot of those ethical questions that we saw in Deep Space Nine, where, you know, Kira was freedom fighter to the Bajorans, to a lot of these Cardassian civilians that were based on Bajor. She was a terrorist, you know, like she was responsible for bombing children, you know, in their estates. It brings up a lot of these great ethical questions, I think.
Deep Space Nine was so ahead of its time as it was. It kind of spoke very much to the time we live in now. It would be interesting just to continue that, speaking about now through this universe.
I think it'd be a great setting.
And I think we could retroactively save the character of Shakar and make him somewhat interesting into like more of like a John Connor figure.
I think it could work. Yeah, you know what? Because obviously I would like to think that maybe he just had to really tone it down once he got into politics or something.
Right.
That's why he was so bland.
Because he sucks in Deep Space Nine.
I mean, do you think there would at least be a Vedic Baryl cameo?
Oh, there has to be.
Okay.
Young Baryl, like an 18-year-old Baryl.
Before he's a Vedic.
Right.
He's just a gardener.
Right. Who's just like, you know, you can have a whole arc with him just like kind of caught up in the Bajoran occupation.
I can't wait to see more Kai Opaka. There should be Vedic Opaka, but you know.
I guess Vedic, yeah.
So, yeah, that'd be the name of the series, Star Trek, Vedic Opaka.
Do you think it would be stronger to have the series focused around Kira herself or around the occupation?
It could be like Chakar resistance cell in general.
Yeah, but I think Kira has to be kind of the star.
It really depends on the actress, I would say. You know, I think if you did a Star Trek Chakar resistance, you know, we already met like a number of characters already from that cell. There are some great characters there. So I definitely think, you know, there's a lot of potential to do this.
And I just think Kira is such a rich character. Like, I don't think most characters in Star Trek demand solo series.
Yeah.
We did that episode on spinoffs, and there was very few we really were like, yeah, that's a great idea. I think she could work.
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sold. Okay. You know, I wanted to move a little bit away from, you know, Deep Space Nine, but I'm still going to go back to my next idea here. We saw Star Trek's take on the Dominion War from one very specific angle.
Yeah.
Every time there's like a next-gen movie coming out, I was always wondering what the next-gen crew was up to during the Dominion War. Apparently they're hanging out in nebulae, you know, finding the Fountain of Youth.
Right.
I thought it was very boring. But what if we saw more of, I don't know, a ship-bound take as opposed to the Deep Space Nine / Defiant angle? I would like it if we had a crew that was dealing with the Dominion War, maybe on the other side of the lines, or even, and here's another kind of idea that I think has potential here, what if it takes place on a Cardassian ship, and it's from their side of the game, where maybe a lot of these officers are questioning exactly what they're doing. They're giving up a lot of their freedoms to join the Dominion. A lot of them are getting killed, fighting against the Federation, the Klingons and the Romulans. Maybe there's a lot of question marks about what they're doing. For just 13 episodes, I think you could pack in two seasons worth of storylines in a real compressed way. Mm-hmm. I think there's some potential here. There could be a great Vorta character who's assigned to the ship.
Yeah.
There could be some tension between the Jem'Hadar soldiers that are roaming about on this Cardassian cruiser.
Right.
I think there's potential for some good conflict, and maybe even somebody who eventually comes to support the resistance cell that, or the resistance movement that one Damar was at the front of there. So, what's your take? Would you want to see? Cam was going along the idea of like more Cardassians. I'm pitching more Cardassians. What are your thoughts about more Cardassians in the Star Trek universe, Andy?
I like the Cardassians a lot. One of my favorite episodes is Chain of Command.
Yes,
right.
And I love all of those Garrick episodes about revealing his past and stuff. I think they're very interesting characters. Or they're written very well. A lot of them are. What I'd like to see, if it were a series set on a Cardassian ship, I'd like to see it where, from their point of view. So not kind of like them figuring out that, oh, why are we doing this? We're the bad guys here. I want to see it from their point of view, where they think they're doing all the right things.
Right.
They're the ones that are being oppressed. They're the ones that are being bullied around in the Alpha Quadrant.
Well, you understand their worldview as opposed to them just saying, hey, wait, our worldview is wrong. You actually understand why they believe their worldview is correct.
Yes.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
What about, I don't know, potential? Because here's the thing. I'm kind of torn. I almost pitched an idea of a post-Dominion Cardassian set series where I kind of like the idea of maybe Cardassia is the new Berlin.
Right.
There's a lot of issues.
Cabaret.
Yes. But look, if it's occupied by Romulans, Klingons, and Federation, it could be maybe a bit of a spy story going on. They're trying to rebuild. Maybe you might have a Garrick cameo. He's still left on the planet.
He's running a cabaret.
Yes. Maybe you could split the anthology season. Maybe it's a 26-episode anthology series this run around.
This is getting this ambitious.
What if you had two parallel stories and then they combine, they join in the end?
I know what you're going back to. You want mirror universe Cardassians.
Here's the question. Do you think it's possible to do this anthology and make it feel watchable to people who didn't watch Deep Space Nine?
No.
That's the issue. I don't care.
I'm making it for me.
Yeah.
These are our ideas. This is a pitch for ourselves.
I think a lot of these could be sold to you without maybe knowing the backstory. This one, I don't know.
My thought process here, though, because I totally agree, is that this anthology idea could go on indefinitely.
Yes.
Like, we could be 10 anthology series in, and they're like, hey, what about that dumb Cardassian Dominion War idea that's Tyler Orton pitched to us a few years ago.
Repeatedly.
Yeah.
Every week in hand-mailed envelopes.
You know, so maybe they get around to it way down the road. But right. That's why I figure, you know, there's just so many different ideas. And Star Trek's ripe for so many different ideas as well. So that's why I think maybe there's a slight possibility. I'm just thinking that there's a lot of story potential here, more so than actual viability of it getting greenlit.
Right. I do really like the idea of examining like a war from a different point of view, because we only saw it through the Deep Space Nine side. So yes. I think the Dominion War is such a major event, although I feel like whatever Star Trek going forward is going to happen is going to be centered more on TNG and TOS if they're going to go backwards as opposed to the 25th century, 26th, whatever. Yeah. And I just feel like they're going to sweep kind of stuff like the Dominion War kind of quietly under the rug. You know, it still exists.
Much like it did in Star Trek Nemesis.
Yeah. So that's my worry. Like, even though it's such a rich, you know, avenue for storytelling. But I would love to see, you know, more points of view from that war, but also what happened after the war.
Well, I think there's so much potential. Let's say the next anthology series takes place in the 25th century.
Yeah.
You could say, hey, look, you know, a bit of an exposition, but there was a war that had huge, huge impacts on just the makeup of, the political makeup of the galaxy. You know, maybe the Klingons aren't the powerhouse they used to be, and maybe a lot of their former conquests, you know, are now independent star systems, and it's just Kronos that's really where the Klingons are now. I don't know, there's just potential here if we do flash forward maybe 50, 75 years.
I think you could definitely do it, because you could refer to the Dominion War in the same way they refer to, like, the eugenics wars.
Yes.
In a way where, it's vague, know, are vague, kind of convey the details you need to know without, you know, having to watch, you know, 7 seasons of Deep Space Nine, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No, that makes sense to me.
I'm down. Andy, I'm curious.
Oh, my next.
Your next idea. I think Andy's going to pitch another Dominion War story to you.
No, I'm not. Yeah. This is another land-based one. Well, actually, not necessarily land-based. Actually, this one, I'd like to see a continuation of the Kitamura Accords.
Okay. I thought about this.
See, yeah. I thought you were going to pitch a series that takes place entirely on the Changeling planet.
The cast just always changes identity every episode, so no one can figure out what's going on.
No, all you do is just look at the Changeling Sea as you're on that rock. It's technically land-based.
It's like a lava lamp.
No, I'm sorry, Andy.
Well, I was
as you were saying.
Okay, I was just saying. I think Star Trek VI kind of launched the what's that Russian word? Oh, I forget. Anyways, it's about like the bringing down the bringing the two sides.
Oh, glasnost.
Glasnost.
Or
yes.
Perestroika. I forget. It's one of the two.
Yeah, it's one of those. One of those.
Okay.
Well, I think it was such an obvious allegory, because at the time that was the fall of the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
And it'd just be interesting to see how they handle the, you know, the new vacuum of power. Or
yeah, because remember in Star Trek VI they announced that you know, Praxis blows up, so now there's what, like 50 years left of life on Kronos.
Yes.
That doesn't happen. So my assumption is, you know, the Federation, the Klingons are aligned, and the Federation does a lot to help the Klingons out. There's a lot of conflict going on Kronos if, you know, you're letting all this help come in from what
foreigners,
is your traditional...
Like some of the issues like we see today when we're... Maybe they needed a lot of immigration in order to boost their economy, and look at the issues that's caused in Vancouver and in Canada, right?
Well, you know what? I'm just going to jump in here with, like, a tiny little pitch that I was just off the back of my notepad that I had, but I like your idea... Because I kind of brought this up last week, Cam, when I was talking about, like, who are the Klingons that aren't in the warrior class?
Yeah, you
class?
Want to see me on Klingon artisans.
Yeah, well...
You see one Klingon scientist, one where she's doing the metaphysic shield or whatever.
Yeah.
That's the only non...
But, like, I have a tough time believing the vast majority of Klingons are all in the warrior class. Like, how does society actually function day to day? You know, for instance, Martok started off as a cook, you know, before becoming a soldier. I have to believe, you know, probably 90% of Klingons are street sweepers or garbage men, or you know what I'm saying? Like,
they're like, oh, geez, someone's fighting on my garbage truck again.
Damn you, Khan! No, but I think, Andy, yeah, if we go with that idea, you're bringing in foreigners, there's immigration issues. I don't think the Klingons are going to be the most friendly or the friendliest towards, say, Federation immigrants yes. coming in to help them
no.
out. I'm also curious because there's so many conquered worlds, like within the Klingon Empire. Why not see more of those aliens? Other than on Rurapente, I don't know if we ever really saw any conquered alien species within the Empire. So I think there's great potential for us to see what exactly happened after the Kinmare Accords.
I'm probably, I guess, of the three of us, maybe the most worn out by the Klingons at
you
this
are.
Point in time.
Why is that?
I just feel like they've been done to death, and I would like to see that sort of attention paid to some of the other aliens. Mm. You know, there's so many in the Star Trek universe, and new ones that could be created. I want more on the Suliban.
Oh, dear.
I'm kidding. I think something like this could be interesting. Like, anything that makes me see the Klingons in a new way
yeah.
is something I'm open to. You know, the idea of looking more at Klingon society is actually interesting to me. I'm kind of worn out more on all the warrior stuff well, and the honor. This would be actually be an interesting idea.
Leading from that, my little note was, no. I said, I have some ideas. I thought that you could mix it up with this as you could set the series from the Klingon point of view.
Right.
But if it's all in Klingon, would there, how would that work?
No subtitles?
Yeah. how would that work in terms of, like, you know, language? Would there be mainstream appeal to see that? I don't think, these are practical questions.
It's possible because they are so recognizable.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you get very distinct cranial ridges, it'll be easy enough to tell them apart. You give, you know, one guy mutton chops, you give another woman a pixie cut. I don't know. You could tell the Klingons apart easily enough.
You could put a human in there anyway.
Sure.
Just to kind of ground it a
bit.
The
cultural exchange kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, sure.
But even, remember when Martok was assigned to the Rotaran and he mm-hmm. really got, like, this loser crew?
Yeah.
Like, it was easy to tell them all apart. You had,
yes.
like, the old man. You had, like, the real new woman who had never really done anything before. Like, I think it'd be easy to...
And if you got a little bit more of a budget, you could have uniforms that don't look all the same.
You've been using those same uniforms for 33 years.
I know.
It's like, really?
Yeah.
I wonder what they smell like at this point.
Not good.
No.
I just remember in Evil Dead 2, there's like documentary footage of them filming with Ted Raimi in the witch suit.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, they're pouring the sweat out of the boots.
God.
That's what I picture for those Klingon outfits. Like every day, they just got to hose them down.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So my next pitch is, this is going to be maybe a little bit of a controversial one with some fans, because it's kind of tied into Axanar. Which, as we know, CBS has kind of shut down the Axanar movie. But I really like the idea of an anthology series covering the character, not so much the Axanar battle, but the character of Fleet Captain Garth of Izar.
Okay.
Because Izar, there's not a lot of him, you know, in sort of Star Trek lore, but he plays an important role.
But you were just crapping on the idea of prequel series, and you've pitched
I know.
Two so far.
Shut up.
Okay.
So basically, you know, Izar was like a star pupil, eminent explorer, you know, one of the best the Federation had. He was key in winning the Battle of Axanar, and then, you know, he kind of goes mad. He's, like, badly maimed in an accident, saved by these aliens. And he's basically tries to offer them the world, and they turn him down. And so he tries to wipe out their entire species.
As one is prone to doing.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically lost his mind at this point. Then he's sent to basically asylum on Elba 2, in like a mental asylum. And so the point when he enters the series is like season 3 of original series, where he's in this asylum, and Kirk encounters him, and he's a madman. And I would love to see a series that really kind of traced the career of Garth of Izar. You know, 13 episodes kind of just looking at this character who's like, imagine like if Captain Kirk ended as like a raving madman trying to kill people.
Yeah.
Like that would be fascinating to see, I think.
The only thing that I'm going to bring up is, because I'm assuming this would take place over the course.
13 episodes, yeah.
Oh, yeah, 13 episodes, but how many years? Like it's not going to take place in like a 6-month time frame.
I think it would have to kind of go from shortly before him being maimed in the incident. So maybe have like 3-4 episodes kind of establishing the character and sort of his history, kind of go through the incident where he's maimed, and then sort of the descent into madness.
So what kind of time period would that encompass?
Well,
how many years would you estimate?
How many years?
Yeah.
Maybe 8 years?
Okay.
5 years?
My only thing that I'm going to bring up here, and I know that you've had this issue when we watch like biopics,
yeah.
is a lot of times they just come off as kind of the greatest hits.
Right.
I definitely think there's potential for a Star Trek series that takes place over a long period of time. Because one of the ideas that I had before this anthology series idea came up, like, what would be a unique way to show Star Trek over 7 seasons is, what if you start off with these Ensign characters mm-hmm. and just watch their careers progress over 20 years,
yeah.
and that's done in, you know, like 5 to 7 seasons. I think that's right. interesting. If you take 13 episodes and you have to, you know, tell a story that takes place over 8 years, I don't know, there could be that greatest hit syndrome that comes
into... I'm not too worried, because okay. I've seen a lot of really great 2-hour movies that span 20 years.
Yes.
I mean, it can be done if it's written well. So, like, they have...
Love Trouble.
They have 13 years to work with.
Sure.
Or 13 episodes, I should say, to work with. And, I mean, look at something like Band of Brothers.
Yeah. Band of Brothers is not a good example because they have a huge cast, but I was thinking right. maybe if it were to be compressed like that, you have a smaller but more focused... More like fleshed out characters.
Mm-hmm. I do like that idea. My recommendation is that you get, I don't know, like specific showcase episodes. Because if you're putting everything on Garth of Izar, like right. it's like every episode is hit all about him.
Right.
That's a lot of pressure on like one actor to do a like.
What if they get Matthew McConaughey?
I would watch that.
All right.
Yeah. It just kind of depends on how they go about doing it, because it's hard. I think it would be tough to have it as an ensemble cast.
Right.
You know.
But would you watch 13 episodes of Captain Kirk?
I would.
Yeah.
You know. So.
So it could work.
If it was Captain Kirk.
Yes, but I think Garth of Izar could be a fascinating character.
But my only concern, if it's like 13 episodes of Captain Kirk over 8 years, mm-hmm. There would have to be a very thought out plan over what story they're telling specifically. Right. I definitely think that there is a notable arc with Garth of Izar.
Yeah.
But we kind of know how it ends. Could it be anything other than tragic, almost, watching this?
No. No, that's the great tragedy, is he's, you know, sort of... Starfleet's great hero who falls.
Do you think there maybe the last 2 episodes may end up with him getting rehabilitated somehow, or I don't know.
Not the way Whom Gods Destroy ends, no.
Non-canon, Cameron.
No, that's the episode, the original series.
Oh, I thought you were talking
episode.
About... Oh, sorry, I got that mixed up with Gods and Men.
Oh, no, not Gods and Men. No,
Cameron.
No, yeah, in the original series episode, like, they find him in the asylum.
Right.
And he's, like, taking it over, basically.
Okay. Andy, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Well,
you can give thumbs sideways.
I would watch it just because I have not seen the
Whom Gods Destroy.
I think he's saying just because he wants to be invited back for another episode. What else can you say?
Right, true.
Okay. Well, for me, I was thinking about what is worth exploring. Like, what has potential here? There's some aliens that you, Cam, you have been like messaging me a little bit as you go through Voyager, and you know, how come, you know, these guys.
The Malon.
Yeah. No, I'm not pitching a Malon series. But
there could be a fight on that garbage truck.
That's true. but one of the aliens that I like most from the Delta Quadrant were the Vidians.
Yeah.
And I think it could be great if you do have 13 episodes dedicated to these Vidians racing for a cure, or we understand why they harvest organs. They are these antagonists that you do have sympathy for. You can understand it. And I believe there's even a throwaway line in a Borg episode talking about how I think the Vidians were even assimilated like, you know, midway through Voyager's run.
Right.
But here's the thing. Spoiler alerts, Borg are crippled by the end of Voyager. I also wonder if maybe that could lead us to some sort of Borg reformation series. You know, like if it's, you know, the Borg learning how to be better, or if it's like them slowly becoming detached from the collective and all these individuals trying to come to grips with their own humanity.
Right.
It could center on maybe a lot of these Vidians who all of a sudden are the Borg cured them of this disease, but now they've got to deal with Borg implants. I think there's still lots left to mine in the Delta Quadrant, because Voyager didn't really spend that much time focused so much on one particular species or another.
Right.
We got to see a couple for like a season or two, and then they had to keep moving on. So you get some cool aliens like 8472 or Hirogen, and then they kind of faded away.
Right. And then you're left with the Malon.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, we get the mail.
Yeah.
Have you gotten to Think Tank, the one featuring Jason Alexander yet?
Yeah, I have.
Any aliens in there that you think are worth exploring more in the Delta Quadrant?
Maybe the one on that view screen?
Yeah.
Where it looks like an elbow or something? You're like, what is that?
I like that dude.
Yeah, he was cool.
Okay. I don't know. What do you think about the potential to explore the Vidians from the Delta Quadrant? Or even just more Delta Quadrant aliens in general, Andy?
Well, it's hard. I actually don't really have that clear recollection of Voyager. I've only watched every episode once when the series ended, and then I never watched another episode again.
Well, it's funny because I was watching the episodes, you know, week to week, and I was also running my own Star Trek Voyager website. So,
Was it on Angel Fire?
It was actually
nice.
Well, you know that because I sent you the link to my fan fiction. It was 12-year-old Tyler.
Weirdly erotic.
It was very Chakotay's
centric. Yes, it was.
Yeah. it was a Chakotay story, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Why were you at 12 years old writing about Chakotay?
Because I was 12 years old.
Not even the writers of Voyager want to write about Chakotay.
Like the face tattoo.
Do you know what it was, though? I think at that age, I was like, it's kind of stupid that they're not focusing on one of the main characters. Right. I even inserted a lot of Joe Carey lines in there. I just thought it was dumb that there were so many characters on Voyager that they weren't paying attention to. Yeah, anyway.
For sure.
The Vidian spinoff. So like you, Andy, I'd only watched Voyager. I think I've seen a couple episodes more than once. I would catch up to a lot of them during summer reruns, but I never went and got into it during syndication.
Right.
But Cam, I've been pretty good at when it comes to my memory. When you've been messaging me, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I had to be the webmaster and just sucking up all this information, writing up reviews. This is back in the days when I would read spoilers all the time, so I would just absorb way more than I really should have.
Yeah, so getting back to the Vidian show, I kind of like the idea because I really like the Vidians. They're definitely, I think, my favorite aliens of the Delta Quadrant, which is kind of a questionable bunch. But
what are the Kazon, Cam?
I don't like the Kazon. I like the Hirogens.
Yeah.
I like Species 8472 up until their final episode, which was one of the stupidest episodes I've ever seen.
In their holographic Star Trek Academy.
Oh my god, I want to do an episode where we just talk about that at some point. Okay. Because that was worst.
I hated that one too. Yes.
Yes. So, anyways, but getting back to the Vidians, I really like the idea. I just wonder if
you like the Vidia.
Oh my god. I question how grim a series would be about a species that's falling apart.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I'll pitch a prequel. Maybe it takes place before they start falling apart.
Yeah, I think that could work, actually.
And they're what are we doing? And it tracks them saying, oh my god, we're going to have to harvest people's organs just to survive and pursue some sort of cure. Maybe one, I don't know, branch of the Vidians, they take off and some of them do find a cure and I don't know. There's possibilities there.
I'd like to know what about a Delta Quadrant series. How would that actually be different than an Alpha Quadrant series? What is it specific? What's new about the Delta Quadrant that's not
so
I couldn't tell in the Alpha Quadrant?
I found the political situation far more static in the Alpha Quadrant. They had the same players all the time, whereas Voyager, they'd go from, star system to star system, and there always seemed to be some different empire or coalition. So it seemed as if there's a lot more players in the Delta Quadrant.
Spread over territory.
Yeah.
They each had their own kind of territory, but then
because more a warring states kind of situation where there's no...
In some cases, yeah, for sure.
Because I think the main difference is you go to the Alpha Quadrants and the Federation, the Romulans, the Klingons, they pretty much divvied up the vast majority of that quadrant plus the Beta Quadrants. And so even though there's multiple species and star systems within those particular government bodies, you kind of knew what to expect, from them. Whereas I think the difference with the Delta Quadrant is that you have all these different star systems, but they're not united the way that the Alpha Quadrant is.
Right.
So
I think it would be tougher for me to get into a Delta Quadrant series because I don't have that familiarity.
Or nostalgia.
Yeah.
Am I pitching stuff that's just going to be too much inside baseball between this, the Dominion idea, and my Mirror Universe one? I don't know.
Well, I mean, I would say the Mirror Universe has the best chance.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I would say, is it too inside baseball? Maybe. But it's also what I can't say that any of them are things I wouldn't want to see myself as a fan.
Right.
It's more the question of would they make it for general audiences? Probably not. But so, I don't know.
Okay. Well, maybe at the end I'll bring up one last question for us. Okay. But Andy, do you have any other ideas that you just want to throw out there before we wrap up?
Well, I do have one more idea. It's actually going way, 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 way back to the time of the Awakening. So where the Romulan-Vulcan split happened.
Oh, yeah. You are going back. Yes. There's even nuclear warfare going on.
Oh, my Lord.
So isn't it like something like 4 BC, or 4...
I think it took place like 4,000 years ago or something. Like something very... Because I was surprised that there were nuclear bombs going off on Vulcan thousands of years before humans ever had the A-bomb.
Right.
But I thought... You know, not much is known about this time period, and there's kind of a free reign to create new canon because it's so early, and well, things can kind of change over, you know, over time.
Cameron, what are your thoughts on a series that takes place only on Vulcan and there's only Vulcan characters? Because you've shared your thoughts before.
Well, it's not even my thoughts. This was we did an episode way back about spin-offs for Star Trek that almost happened, that were in development or whatever. And one of the original, sort of, I think, post-original series that they were thinking about doing was a Vulcan series. And they said that ultimately they abandoned it because you were dealing with a cast of characters that did not show emotion.
But that wouldn't be the case.
Right.
That would not be the case.
You have the Romulans, right, to balance it out.
No, because even the Vulcans at that time were not...
That's a good point. Yeah. So it's, more...
So you'd have a lot... more differences between the Vulcan characters. They would have different interests. They're not guided by logic all the time.
Yes, very true.
As long as you give them different haircuts and they're walking around with pointy ears.
Should they be
ears,
like proto-Vulcans?
No, sure. From what our perspective, they would actually look... They should look the same. Weren't the differences cultural? Isn't that the split?
Oh, between the Romulans and the Vulcans?
There are no Romulans and Vulcans at that time, right?
I was just getting at the point, like, you look at TNG and Voyager, and whenever a Vulcan appears, I can't really tell them apart from, like, other Vulcans, because they all have the same Beatles haircut.
Right.
As long as you give everybody different haircuts.
Right.
It's gonna be...
And that style's stuck for 4,000 years? You know, Romulans still use it?
Yeah. I don't know.
So
I think as long as we can actually physically tell the Vulcans and Romulans apart, I think that, there's a lot more potential there.
And one idea I thought would be kind of cool is because it's such a long period and they've thrust into this kind of like dark ages, what if you had like introduced elements of, Isaac Asimov's Foundation series?
Okay.
Where you have like there's this 5,000-year plan. The Vulcans have a 5,000-year plan, and the Romulans have a 5,000-year plan, and then they develop this plan and execute it, and then you see what happens, right?
Well, in one universe, the Romulus is destroyed, and in the J.J. Abrams universe, Vulcan is destroyed. Yes. So it's kind of interesting that split that happens between the two planets over the course of 5,000 years.
It would just be interesting to see sort of the Vulcans pitched more as like more like humans. And because it's often we look at the Vulcans as a little stuffy and a little boring.
Yeah.
But they are kind of at a higher plane of existence than we are.
That's true.
So it'd be interesting to see them working towards that because we've never really gotten to see that.
Who would be the... Every series has kind of that outsider observer of humanity. Who would be the outside observer of Vulcans and Romulans? Like who would be the one commenting on like how far behind the times they are? Would there be visits from other... species? Because
an Andorian?
Well, the thing is, if there is a split, that means that thousands of years ago there was space travel available to the Vulcans and Romulans if the Romulans eventually left the planet. So I don't know, maybe there could be an Andorian that pops up or a Tellarite. That'd be fun.
I was gonna say Tellarite, but then I'm like, I don't think they'd have very good insights. I feel like the Andorian would be a little more concise in his opinions.
Do you think an Andorian would be able to survive on planet Vulcan, just the heat? Because they like the Andorians are from an ice planet.
Right.
The Vulcan heat seems oppressive to me from a rather temperate climate. Anyway.
Maybe it could be like a Han Solo thing where like there was an Andorian that was adopted by the Vulcans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Why not?
He goes around calling everybody barbaric.
Exactly. Right. So I've got kind of one joke one, and then I'll go into my real one.
Oh, okay.
So
I thought all of these last ones were joke ones.
Oh, jeez. So the joke one is, there is a great comic book arc, well-known for Marvel fans. It's called The Coming of Galactus. This is the Fantastic Four 48-49, where the character who's sort of the planet consumer Galactus comes to Earth, and the Fantastic Four have to team up with Silver Surfer, who's from space, and basically fight back against Galactus. And it sort of represents the best of humanity fighting back and saving Earth from certain doom. What would happen if we, say, took this sort of concept, because it's never been done well, it sure wasn't done well in Rise of the Silver Surfer, brought it to the Star Trek universe, and did it with the Crystalline Entity?
I'm sure that would get greenlit, no problem, by the executives at CBS.
Are you saying...
It's got win written all over it, Cam.
It wouldn't be compelling to see a planet band together as one force against the Crystalline Entity.
No, let's do... I'm assuming you're pitching another prequel series where it's all just Dr. Soong, like, building his android prototypes, and they're doomed to death.
Yeah. Moving on!
Okay, thank you.
Okay, no, the real one is... I think it would be interesting to do a series on the Q Continuum. Now...
Would it take place on that desert road that we saw in Star Trek Voyager?
No, none of that happened. We're rewriting all of that.
Okay.
Because believe me, I thought about that too. I think it would be interesting because when the Q, you know, earlier in their existence were like explorers. They were all about, you know, figuring out about new species. And then eventually they just got bored and just started messing with people.
Yeah.
I think it would be really interesting to chart sort of the society's journey from being, you know, from being explorers, essentially, to just like being kind of demigods that just want to like screw around with different alien races. It would allow us to see...
It would allow us
to see different alien races and their interactions with the Q. But I also think just like... you could really have some fun from a storytelling point of view and really do this series kind of out of chronology, kind of like a Pulp Fiction type thing, because the Q can bounce around wherever.
Yeah.
You can kind of do almost like a meta story of the Q bouncing all around the galaxy in time. I think that could be really cool.
We can find out what the Q think about Amsterdam and their Royale with cheese.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
No, you know, I actually think over the course of 13 episodes, that would be a fun way. I think you would have to focus on a couple consistent Q characters to give it continuity. But if you're bouncing around exploring, trekking to new planets over the course of space and time, I think that'd be a fun way. I also wouldn't mind getting out of the Milky Way galaxy every once in a while.
Yeah.
Go to the other side of the universe. Go to where we had the Traveler take us to and where no one has gone before.
Right.
There's some weird stuff going on.
Maybe the Traveler could have a cameo.
I would love a Traveler cameo.
That would be awesome.
It's not my joke pitch. I'm dead serious about a Traveler series.
I definitely thumbs up that one.
It's like the Littlest Hobo. Where he just like goes and helps people every week.
And it's just the same, it's the Littlest Hobo theme song playing. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll have to Google that, American listeners, because I don't think they know what that is. I think it's a Canadian-only thing.
It's a cultural touchstone here in Canada.
Yeah.
Everybody knows the Littlest Hobo.
It's true. Look up the opening credits on YouTube. It's worth it, trust me.
I'll just do rapid fire kind of couple ideas. I wouldn't mind doing maybe a Star Trek Maquis series. You can really flesh out Chakotay.
Oh, my lord.
I joke. No, I think maybe touch upon the Maquis again. That could be interesting.
Rolaren,
yeah. Yep. Whatever happened to her and Tom Riker? You know, that could be interesting.
Yeah.
What about the Romulan War? We were... It seemed as if it was within our grasp on Enterprise, and we never got around to it, which is disappointing. It could be Romulan War / Birth of the Federation. I also... I'm not so sure about this one, but if it's 13 episodes, I kind of think this one's going to happen. I think we might get a Section 31 anthology series. And it's not one that I'm big on, but I think...
Will it be like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Oh, dear. Yes. We're going to get Chloe Bennett to lead the cast of
this one.
Yeah.
I always thought their treatment of Section 31 was a little bit kind of like comic relief. Because they always mixed it in with those, like... Didn't they mix it in with, one of Bashir's, like, inmate buddies or something like that? Or something... There's something to do with... I can't really remember, but I always thought there was like a comic.
I never thought it was comic relief myself.
Not maybe comic relief, but not so serious.
Just like kind of silly.
Yeah, it was like
I thought it was very serious though.
Maybe if it were done more in a darker atmosphere, like a darker tone.
I don't like how it was necessarily portrayed in Enterprise and in the J.J. Abrams film.
Right.
Because the way it was depicted there is that it was like the Starfleet's version of Black Ops, mm-hmm. where it was really established in Deep Space Nine as kind of this underground organization within the Federation. It wasn't... They recruited Starfleet operatives, but it wasn't a Starfleet division or anything like that. So mm-hmm. I like... If they're going to do it, focus more on the Federation angle, how there's all these people that are part of its web and they're not necessarily Starfleet officers either. Mm-hmm. So I only pitch it because I think it actually has a chance of catching on. But I don't know, guys, are there any rapid fire ideas that maybe just came to you as we're going through this, or do we want to wrap up with that one question that I wanted to ask you guys?
I had one.
Okay.
And I just thought it'd be interesting to kind of maybe recycle the Brian Singer Federation pitch.
Oh, okay.
Because, I mean, people kind of griped about maybe having that for a full series.
Yeah.
But I think 13-episode story about the fall of the Federation, it could kind of be like, sort of like comic books often have those sort of like the end storylines. Like, it doesn't necessarily happen, but it's sort of like what could happen in the future.
Yeah.
And it would be interesting to do 13 episodes sort of about the fall of the Starfleet and Federation, and having like the Ferengi in power over the galaxy, and like the Cardassians and Klingons being kind of more like spiritual aliens. I think that could just be interesting to see.
I'd want to see more of the hope and optimism. There has to be a hint that the Federation is going to have some sort of rebirth. Or
yeah, well, the pitch of the show was that Alexander Kirk would be the captain of a new Enterprise that was kind of trying to rebuild the original vision of what Starfleet was.
Which is interesting, since the Kirk bloodline has been completely eliminated, so I guess he just shares the same name.
Yeah, no kidding.
But, yeah.
Antonia had a surprise.
Oh, dear, yes. So, wait. What proportion of Alexander Kirk is horse?
I don't have an answer to that one.
Okay, well, if Antonia is centaur.
Centaur, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I guess Alexander Kirk just hooves?
Maybe like 10%?
10%?
15%? Sure.
He's got a tail at least, right?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, that's an inside joke for all those listeners of ours. I think, and here's the thing, yeah, you do that as 13 episodes, you could flash forward another 50 years, and maybe the Federation is, for another anthology series, the Federation is gaining steam once again. And it's right.
You don't have to dwell in that period in an anthology series.
Okay. So, guys, this is the last question I just wanted to pose to y'all. What do you think would work for general audiences? Because I think that's kind of the tough question. We're getting hints that the first anthology series is going to be, you know, and that's post-TOS film era, pre-TNG era. I think that makes sense for mainstream audiences because a lot of people identify just simply the uniforms from that era. But what else do you think has potential for mainstream audiences to jump on board? What do you think, you know, CBS is going to green light for future seasons? Because I think a lot of the ideas we're coming up with, they're very contingent on what's come before and what the fans really want to see. I don't know. Andy, is there anything that you think might have potential here for, I guess, just like your average buddy who's not a Star Trek fan? What do you think would interest him or her?
Well, it would have to be human-based, and I think it's got to be, there would be a lot of action.
Yeah, I'm fearful of that myself.
I really think your eugenics wars, it could happen.
Yeah?
That, to me, would not surprise me.
You mean in real life?
Yes, that's exactly
right. And then I'd be the one collecting royalties.
Yes. No, I could totally see, because they've gone to Khan for Into Darkness because they thought that would appeal to mainstream viewers.
Yes.
I could see them going back to that well with a Eugenics War 13-episode series. That, to me, seems, of all the ones we pitched tonight, that is the one, to me, that feels the most likely to happen.
Not tracking Garth of Izar's mental health issues?
That's what I want to see.
Okay.
I could also see one set kind of that really did feature Vulcans very heavily.
Yeah. I think it's a bit of a tough sell, but they're such an iconic species. And I think if you go with Andy's pitch about having it take place 4,000 years ago.
Yeah.
You're incorporating space travel. You've got A-bombs. It's an alien planet, but a recognizable species. And they're not all these logical beings. I think that has a lot of great potential there,
too. I do, too.
Okay. For me, I have no idea what mainstream audiences love. I see what's rated as top 20 TV shows on right now. I just don't get it. So color me baffled, and we'll see what happens. I'm very hopeful that this business model works. To me, it screams winner, like from just the way that they're going to pay for the series with the licensing, how they're going to distribute it on a CBS All Access. I know a lot of people are claiming they'll never pay $6 a month to watch Star Trek. I think that's silly. You pay $15 to go see a Star Trek film once every 3 years. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'd love to get it on a more frequent basis. So,
right.
Okay, guys.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com.
Guys, make sure you tune in next week. We're going to be talking about the current state of Star Trek. Now, yes, we've done that episode before, but that was Star Trek 2015. A lot has happened in the last year, so we're going to be tracking where Star Trek really stands right now.
Right. And so also leave a review for us on our iTunes page. It will help us get wealth and fame so that we can have a decent shot in the eugenics wars.
Yes.
So you can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam. V is in Vedic Barile anthology series? No. 7 seasons and a movie. Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's REPORTON. N is in Nog, the anthology series. Coming next year.
And Andy?
And you can find me at Sockbot, SOCKBOT.
Okay, so until next time.
T as in trekking to Captain Nog.
I was going to say trekking to the fire caves. Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.